You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor, and you are listening to episode 45 of the podcast. I hope that everybody has had a wonderful week and that you are all ready for the weekend. Be sure to let me know what you have going on, if you guys have a concert that you're going to, anything fun that you're up to. I always love to hear what you guys have going on. But there has been a lot happening in the rock world since I spoke to you guys last week. And one of the biggest pieces of news that we heard is that Megadeth has finally announced who will be replacing David Ellefson, for this new Megadeth record and, of course, the tour that they have coming up this fall. I'm not going to get into the situation, but we all know what happened with David Ellefson. In May, Dave Mustaine and Megadeth had put out a statement that David Ellefson was no longer in the band. And since then, Dave has been giving a lot of different hints over on his Cameo account. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Cameo. You know, if a celebrity is on the app/website, they, offer a fee where you can pay and have them record a video for you, whether it's for a friend, for yourself, celebrating a birthday, anniversary. Even if there's no occasion, you can pay a fee and they'll make a video saying hi to you and everything. Dave Mustaine recently joined Cameo a couple months back, and he's been dropping a ton of hints lately, not only just for the new Megadeth record, which he's been including different snippets of riffs and vocal lines and all this cool stuff. And he was also hinting of who, the new bass player in Megadeth would be. And he did this whole Cameo where he kind of like said that the new bass player was like in the back and he showed him, but he didn't show him. And we were all still kind of wondering. But it's been revealed this week, the wondering can cease, that James Lomenzo is going to be returning to Megadeth. Of course, James was in the band from 2006 to 2010 when Ellefson, re-entered the band after that little conflict that they had a couple years prior. And Ellefson has been in the band, of course, up until this year, back in May. So James is finally returning to Megadeth. He's going to be featured on the new Megadeth record, which we also found out has just been sent in for mixing. So we're going to be hearing more about that soon. But I'm looking forward to, seeing what James does. It's kind of second time around in the band. I actually have tickets to see Megadeth. They're playing BB&T, which is a amphitheater here in the Philadelphia area, technically Camden, New Jersey. And I've had tickets to this show for quite some time, but haven't we all? It's been rescheduled like 4 times, and I'm just praying to whoever is up there that shows will still be continuing in September when the show is scheduled to take place. But as of right now, this is going to be my first time seeing Megadeth. And if you watch the Hudson Valley Squares, we did an episode this week on our favorite heavy metal debut records. Any kind of metal, really, heavy metal, but we included thrash, death metal, all that stuff. So I talked about how I've always kind of been more of a Megadeth fan than a Metallica fan. And don't get me wrong, I love both bands. I love Metallica too. There was some confusion that all of a sudden I didn't like Metallica. I love Metallica too, but I've always liked Megadeth just a smidge more. So, and it was really funny too, because when I was trying to figure out who would be replacing, David Ellefson, I really, really wanted it to be Jason Newsted, just so we could have that old, haha, he was in Metallica too type laugh. But we've heard from Jason on, many accounts now that he doesn't really do the whole touring thing anymore. It's kind of really hard on him physically, which I totally understand. So I knew that it wasn't going to be Jason. And I also wasn't the only one who thought of that. It was like this running joke, afterwards. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what James does. I'm looking forward to seeing Megadeth for the first time this September. If you are going to see Megadeth on this tour, be sure to let me know. And if you see me at the Camden show, please feel free to come up and say hi. I know a lot of people, you know, live in this area and people travel for shows, especially now. You know, a lot of people are heading out to see concerts as, you know, these are some of the first in 18 months. So if you see me, be sure to come and say hello. Also, I saw this incredible video of the Scorpions rehearsing a brand new song called Seventh Son, or that is what we are assuming the title is of the track. And I just have to say that I was completely blown away by Klaus Main's voice. It just, he has not changed, or he just seems that he has not aged. His voice has not aged, you know, since the Scorpions' prime, you would say. The rehearsal video is just insane. I love the Scorpions so much. So if you haven't seen that video, I definitely recommend that you go check it out. I can assure you that you will be just as in awe of Klaus's voice as I was and still am. I am definitely looking forward to some new Scorpions music that is hopefully in the works, which we know is in the works, but I'm not sure if there's going to be an album, anything like that. Either way, the fact that the Scorpions are still continuing and still writing music is incredible, and I'm excited for whatever they have, you know, coming soon. So stay tuned, go check that video out, let me know what you think of Klaus's voice. I think it's absolutely amazing. He does just a killer job still. The band sounds tight. It's just, it's really, really great. And a little bit, you know, of sadder news, I really wanted to mention on the podcast, you know, as I mentioned many times, my tie to the Hudson Valley and especially the Chance Theater, which is a venue that was a really important place to me growing up. It was the venue that when I was really getting into rock on my own, I saw a lot of shows there when I was a teenager and in high school, and I have a lot of friends who work at the Chance, and I still say that it's my favorite venue in the world. I haven't been to every venue yet, obviously, but it'll always be probably the most important to me and my development as a fan and in my career. And I'm really, really heartbroken to say that Frank Pallett, who owned the Chance for many, many years now, I believe over 20 years, if I'm correct, he sadly passed away. He was admitted into the hospital last month, and I had been reading updates from his sister, who works at the Chance, and some friends of mine who were really, really close with Frank and his family, and the news came out yesterday, Wednesday, August 11th, that he had sadly passed away, and I just wanted to send my condolences to his family and to his entire Chance family. You know, he put on so many amazing shows at that venue. You know, he had everybody from David Bowie there to Bob Dylan to helping put on every single show that I saw when I was in high school. That venue is so important to me. And I had the opportunity to meet him a couple of times. The last time I saw Frank was at the Nita Strauss show back in 2019. So it's really devastating news. He was more than just the owner. He really, really, really cared about that venue, and he was doing everything that he could to make the venue, you know, last and stay open during the craziness of the last year. So it's really devastating to hear. And if you are a Hudson Valley local, or if you have been to the Chance, odds are that you saw Frank and probably heard of this. So sending all of my love again to his family and remembering him this week and remembering all of the, you know, amazing things that he did for the music community where I grew up and did for, you know, my own experience in loving music. You know, like I said, so many of those shows that I went to during that time meant so much to me and are just kind of ingrained in me and made me love that venue so much. So we're thinking of you, Frank. We miss you already. And every single time I go to the Chance from here on out, you know, you will be on my mind. So just gut-wrenching news. And the last couple weeks have just been so brutal in that department. We've lost so many people like Frank who have been so important to this scene, and you know, so many musicians from Dusty Hill to Jeff LaBar to Joey Jordison, just so many people. So if you have been affected by this loss, which so many of us have, I'm thinking of you. You know, things are going to get better. It's just been an absolute brutal year and a half, to say the least. But on this week's episode of the podcast, I am bringing you guys a brand new interview with guitarist Ace Von Johnson, who is currently the guitarist in the band LA Guns, as well as in Neon Coven. And aside from Ace's work in the musical realm and the music industry, Ace is also a voiceover actor, a very strong advocate for pit bulls and pit bull rescue, and he's also a lover of horror like myself. So I've actually been friends with Ace for a couple of years now, honestly a long time, and we've never met in person. We've kind of been like social media buddies, friends on Twitter, Facebook, you know, Instagram, all that fun stuff. We've kept up with each other, you know, paid attention to what's been happening in each other's careers and everything like that. So I have been wanting to have him on the podcast and figured that now was as good of a time as any, and Ace was up for it, so I was happy to sit down and speak with him and have him on the podcast. I really loved this conversation because that's exactly what it was. It was kind of just a conversation between friends, which is even how I'm trying to approach the intro that you're listening to right now. I feel like for so long, I was trying so hard to make everything that I recorded absolutely perfect, and I've realized that I actually like it a lot better when I just sit here and speak my mind and just talk to you guys like I would be talking to a friend. So that's how I've kind of been approaching my interviews lately and even speaking to you guys, and that's exactly what my conversation with Ace was like. So we covered a lot of ground here, you know, everything from Ace's most recent move to Nashville. He was living in Los Angeles for a long time, actually grew up in LA, so he just recently made the move to Nashville. We talk a little bit about why he did so, what it's been like, and then, of course, branch out into a little bit of his history, including his love for horror, which I mentioned. He's a huge horror fan, you know, the old school monster movies, ranging from those to even movies today and everything in between. We also chat about how that love for horror translated into his love for music and getting into his favorite band of all time, The Misfits, and, you know, how that led into a career for him in the music industry. We also touch on his advocacy for pit bulls, which I've always loved about Ace. He has his own pit bull, Myla, who he has had for many years. And if you are familiar with Ace, you know, she's a big part of everything that he does. So I'm sure that you are also familiar with her. But we talk a little bit about his advocacy with pit bulls and, you know, everything that that has brought into his life, including, you know, new friendships, etc., all that fun stuff. And yeah, we just talk about a lot. We cover a lot in this hour of conversation, and I really think that you guys are going to enjoy it. Speaking of enjoying things, I appreciate all of the kind messages that I received on last week's interview with Steven Jensen, owner, CEO, founder of Warren Star Clothing. It's really great because I had a lot of people reach out and mention that they weren't really 100% familiar with Steven or even a little bit of Warren Star, and, you know, that they found the interview really interesting, even though that they weren't maybe 100% familiar with him. So I'm really glad to hear that, and I'm glad that you guys got something out of that interview. It always makes me happy to, you know, make people more familiar with big players in the music industry, especially Steven. He is a creative, you know, brain that has done a lot of work that you're familiar with. So if you have not checked that episode out, be sure to go ahead and check out episode 44 of the Metal from the Inside podcast to hear my interview with Steven Jensen, again, CEO, founder, owner, all that fun stuff of the clothing brand Warren Star Clothing. But like I mentioned, I'm very excited to have you guys listen to this week's interview with Ace Von Johnson. We're going to get right into it, but before we hop in, I want to remind you guys to go ahead and leave a 5-star review on the Metal from the Inside Apple Podcast page, Facebook page, or Podchaser page. Every single review that is left helps so much in getting more people exposed to the Metal from the Inside podcast and joining our community over here. So be sure to go ahead and leave a 5-star review. It is extremely appreciated. And in that realm, I am finally developing a Patreon. It's been a long time in the making. I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, but haven't actually went ahead and made it. But the account is made. I'm currently setting up a page, and I really want to know what you guys would like to see on the Patreon, you know, what you would like to see offered, you know, what you would like to get in a package, a subscription package. So be sure to let me know. You know, I have my own ideas that I might start out with, but, you know, they can change. I can add stuff. So if there's anything specifically that you would like to see, be sure to go ahead and tweet me, you know, send me a direct message on Twitter, send me a direct message on Instagram. And I, of course, would love to hear your ideas. So stay tuned for that. And yes, like I mentioned, leaving a 5-star review is so helpful. I will be reading reviews on the podcast. So if you'd like to have your name on the podcast, to have me read what you think of the podcast, be sure to go ahead and leave a review. That's enough of me talking. We are going to get right into my interview with guitarist for LA Guns and Neon Coven, Ace Von Johnson, when we get back from this very short break. What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I have a very good friend on today, Mr. Ace Von Johnson, a guitarist that many of you all know. He used to play in Faster Pussycat, now the guitar player in LA Guns, and he's done a wide variety of stuff over the course of his career. But Ace and I were actually just talking. I've known him online and stuff for so long, and we have a lot of the same friends, but this is the first time we're actually talking. So it's great to have you on and to finally meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks for having me, Sydney. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I kind of want to just talk about what the last year has kind of been like for you, because, I mean, I always say this, but it's kind of the understatement of the century, but you actually relocated, right? Because you were in Los Angeles for a while, and now you're in Nashville.
Yeah, born and raised. Spent 37 years in Los Angeles, or at least Southern California. And I started looking for houses out here in Nashville about summer of last year, and found a place in November. Came out in, I guess, December, and here I am. So I'm just making the best of it, just reacquainting myself with friends and socializing in small doses with a bunch of people who most are musicians, most of which are, you know, like guys in bands. You probably, you know, the bands and whatnot, but I'll spare the name dropping, but just hanging out with my friends and catching up and working from home, really, you know?
Yeah. So what was the catalyst to move to Nashville? Because I've kind of seen that with a lot of musicians I know and a lot of friends I have, a lot of people are making the movement from LA to Nashville or even kind of out, you know, east. So what was the reasoning for you to kind of change places?
Well, a friend of mine told me that I started talking about moving out to Nashville in about 2013. So it wasn't just some spur of the moment thing. It was something I'd been kind of milling over for a long time. And I was coming out here probably every 18 to 24 months in my off time, not just for work. And I would usually stay with Tony Higbee, who plays for Tom Kiefer.
Yeah.
And is one of my, you know, closest friends. I think I'll probably end up seeing him later today. And it's just, every time I'd come out here, I'd have a better and better time. And it just turned into one of those things where I was like, oh, you live here too? And even last night I went out to drink, to have some drinks and catch up with a buddy of mine, my buddy Jack. He's in a band called Bayside. They're kind of like a big Warped Tour band. They're from up where you are. And I haven't seen Jack since we were both like puppies. I haven't seen him. I think we're trying to do the math. We hadn't seen each other in like 16 or 17 years.
Wow.
And he's right up the street. He's like 3 miles from me. So every time I come out, and it's just an example, but every time I come out here, I was like, oh, you live here too? You live here too? And everybody, and what I like to say is just everybody I know that's in Nashville, whether it's like Chuck Garrick, or I don't even want to go into this whole thing, like this guy and this guy, but everybody I know out here is amazing. Like I everybody I know in Nashville or Tennessee area is great. And I can't say the same about Los Angeles. So just after a lifetime of doing that, you know, doing the damn thing out there, I just kind of had enough. And with the pandemic and I wasn't touring and I was paying a fortune for this tiny one bedroom apartment in Hollywood, just to feel like a prisoner in my own home. And I started, like I said, looking at houses about a year ago. And I was like, you know, for less money, I could have way more near people I would rather be near. And, you know, I feel like this turns into a name droppy thing, but one of my other three closest friends in the world lives about, I don't know, maybe a 4-hour drive. And so I've seen him, it's Ricky Rackman. I've seen him a ton. He came and stayed here. I'm going to go stay with him. And so he's not far. My stepbrother's not far. I went and saw them, he and his wife, a couple months ago. There may be a 3-hour drive. So there's just a lot of, you know, and I went and Tony Higbee and I went, and Brian Forsyth, we went and drove and saw ZZ Top cut like 2 months ago or whatever. And, you know, I feel like I'm more centrally located. So there's just, not that Los Angeles isn't, but I just felt like it was like, I kind of did this already and for a lifetime. And I just was ready to get out of there and, you know, more bang for my buck. And I'm way happier here. And I have my, you know, I'm in my office in my man cave versus like crammed into a, you know, I was doing like some voiceover stuff and everything in like one, and all this, like any press stuff in like a closet, you know, literally. So I just, I'm stoked. And that concludes my TED talk, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, I've toyed around with the idea of like, you know, where I'm going to go next. Cause you know, I just graduated school and everything. So, you know, I'm kind of looking, you know, where do I want to go? You know, what opportunities and everything. And I've thought of LA, you know, many times. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I've always, all the bands I've loved are always from Los Angeles, and it's that whole, you know, like scene, and it's cool. And I've heard from a lot of people who actually have lived in LA or do live in LA. They're like, don't do it. They give me like the warning. They're like, don't do it.
It's a wonderful place to go and spend like a good 10 days or whatever, you know, even a summer. And I say this fully knowing that I've seen it countless times, but like when I say LA, I don't, you know, I mean like Hollywood and that whole circuit, it has a tendency to eat people alive, and I've seen it. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to just grow up there, and it wasn't, you know, I didn't move to LA to make it. It just, I was in a band and I joined another band. And, you know, it's pretty cutthroat. And the sort of joke that I make is everybody's like, hey, nice to meet you. What can you do for me? What can you do for me? And there's just a lot of that. And it's exasperating. It's just, everybody's got, I don't want to poo-poo on my town too much, but a lot of people there just have a straight out, they just have an agenda.
Yeah.
And like, I'm at a point in my life where I'm like trying to do more dog rescue stuff, and I need some more space, and I want to be around people that don't suck and, or suck my, you know, energy. So I just, you know, I think everybody should go to Hollywood and go to LA and take it in, you know, if someone's never been, and, you know, hit the strip and go see a concert, if that's even a thing anymore. And, you know, there's so much to see and so much to take in, but it's definitely, you know, everyone's like, what, even my sister's like, when are you going to move back? And I'm like, never, you know, I don't think so. So, you know, take from that what you will, but I you know, that's just me. I may be a bitter old jaded.
No, I mean, you're not the only person that I've heard, you know, that's said that stuff. I mean, it's pretty obvious, you know, LA kind of has that, you know, reputation of if you go, you know, you'll make it. And I mean, it's one of those things that maybe, at least in the industry that we're in, maybe that was the case 20, 30 years ago. It's not really as much anymore. You know, I know, don't kid myself. I'm not like, I'm going to go to LA and I'm going to see Motley Crue on the Sunset Strip and, you know, Van Halen playing the Whiskey, you know, that those days are over. But you're not the first person though that said that stuff about that city.
I think for what you're doing, I think it would be great experience to get out there and just, you know, maybe do some networking and see the sights and hang out or wherever, you know, take an extended vacation. But if you moved there, I think you would turn around after a short period of time.
Yeah. And it's cool. You were talking about how you have, you know, so much more space now. And you posted this really cool picture on Twitter, I don't know, like a week or so back, of all these movie posters that you have kind of in your stairway. And I know that you collect the one sheets, right?
Yeah, I've got a myriad of them, if you will. And the room I'm in now is the only room in the house. Well, in my bedroom, I guess. The only room in the house that's not like littered with them. Just because there's no real wall space in here. But I've got, collect the vintage, you know, original theatrical run horror movie posters or one sheets or quads and half sheets and day bills and, you know, the whole thing. There's probably like three or four things I'm really like passionate about. And that's like one of my nerdy, you know, I'm up at like 7 a.m. like on eBay or like some collector thing. Like, oh, I got to get that obscure Vincent Price piece, you know. And and having only been here for maybe 6, 7, 8 months now, or however long it's been, I'm still kind of decorating a little bit, so, or adding to the nonsense. But yeah, the hallway has slowly turned into what was like 4 pieces, then became 8, and then became 12, and then it's just like a, you know. But I do enjoy like waking up, which I'm still waking up a little bit here, by the way, and just kind of like you know, I walk down my hall and I go down the stairs and I kind of am like, yeah, I live here. This is my stuff. This is pretty fucking cool, you know?
Yeah, I have always loved your love for horror because I'm a big horror fan myself. And I know you kind of have a long history with the genre and horror movies, but what was your introduction into that world? Because I know it was when you were a kid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why I'm so feel so strong about it is it was a combination of my father playing. That was sort of like our bonding as far back as I can remember. I mean, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old is him putting on all the, you know, the classics, the black and whites and stuff like that. And whether it was, you know, the Universal films or Hammer Horror or, you know, anything in between, Amicus films and, you know, all the other stuff and nerd stuff. And so he was, he grew up in the Valley in Los Angeles and lived down the street or in the same neighborhood as this director named William Castle, who directed House on Haunted Hill and The Tingler and a few other sort of popular cult 60s horror movies. And so my dad had this rapport with this local director who would bring all the neighborhood kids over and show movies at his home, like movie theater before they came out. Yeah, so right. I just remember my dad always being like, I saw this before it was in theaters. And he had, I don't know if I've ever even told this, he had a girlfriend in high school. Again, it's LA, so everybody's mom is a this or a dad is a that, or their cousins, literally. My cousin's a movie director, and I'll come to that in a second. But and then his girlfriend in high school's dad created the Robbie the Robot for Lost in Space, and that was also used in some sci-fi movies. So it was always sort of something that he would get excited about for nostalgia reasons, which is what now I get excited about for nostalgia reasons. And that's just my dad passed away when I was a kid, but so that's sort of like my bonding or was my bonding with him. And then my cousin Mark Lester is a somewhat well-known movie director who did some horror films. I think his most well-known movie would be Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Wow. And then Firestarter with Drew Barrymore. And then he had a movie called Class of 1984, which was Michael J. Fox's first film. And then the sequel, Class of 1999, I was on set for when I did the math. I think I was 7. And so there's a scene in that movie that's sort of like the climactic chase. And it's like this Terminator type robot chasing the girl. And I just remember being, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old and being like, whoa, you know, this is what I want to, you know, I wanted to do movie makeup for a long time, like special effects stuff. So anyways, that's what launched my interest into horror movies and that whole thing. And it's just sort of embedded in my DNA now at this point, you know, clearly, literally.
What's your favorite horror movie if you had to pick one? I know that's a really hard question, but
I think at the end of the day, I think at best I could probably whittle it down to like 3. So that's the best I can do. I'm sorry. Probably, you know, if I had to pick one, just like at the end of the day, if I really had to pick one, it would probably be The Exorcist, because it still scares me. It's still intriguing. It's a close first with second being The Shining, because those are the first two movies I saw way too young, thanks Dad, and just scared I can swear, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know anymore.
Not a question. You're good.
Scared the poo-poo out of me. Those movies scared the shit out of me. I mean, I remember I was probably in third grade. How old are you in third grade? 8, 9, 10, yeah, 12? I don't know. Yeah. mid elementary school, a little kid, and I saw The Shining. I remember that one, and I had to sleep in my dad's room on the floor because I was like, the naked woman's gonna get me, you know. And I love those movies to this day, and I think I put on The Shining maybe like a week ago, and I was just like, god, this movie's so like a weird visceral mind fuck. And those two, and then top my third one, because I said 3, would probably be Creepshow. Circa, you know, 82, just because I am a big fan of, like, I sort of do it by like eras. Like, I'm like, okay, you get the classic stuff, maybe the mid 70s, maybe 80, whatever you want to call it, since that's now what, 40 years ago, almost at 50. And then you get into like more contemporary schlocky, funny, and slashers and that kind of stuff. I mean, like, who's really taking, you know, a guy in a hockey mask that seriously? So yeah, anyways, again, that's the topic I'll talk all day about. But
yeah, the funny thing about The Exorcist is that when my dad was growing up, one of his friends, his childhood friends, or it was either childhood friend or somebody that he knew in high school or college. It was somebody that he hung out with a lot. His mom actually played the mom in The Exorcist.
Oh, Ellen Burstyn, I think?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And they would go over to his house and they would just mercilessly fuck with her and like make like the noises and like running up and down the stairs, all this stuff. And I remember when I was younger and I watched a movie for the first time, my dad, it's like his memory of that movie because he would always just screw around with his mom, which is pretty hilarious.
That's amazing. She's just announced that she's doing some new Exorcist stuff. They're doing like a, not a reboot, but like a much later continuation slash sequel, I think trilogy or something like that. And she's going to be the only linear character to come through or whatever you want to call it. Obviously, I don't think Linda Blair will be involved, but I'm interested to see what develops from that.
I mean, you were friends or are friends with Linda Blair, aren't you yourself?
Yeah, I consider Linda a friend. She's couldn't be any nicer. There was a couple years, maybe 3 years, where I was doing a bunch of horror movie conventions. It's just like they like to kind of pad them with a lot of pop culture and musicians, et cetera, even other horror cons. And so I've got to befriend a ton of people in that sort of world, which is something as a fan that I'm just super grateful for. But Linda and I met at a convention and ended up sort of making small talk on a flight home. And sorry, if I keep looking back because this one's distracting me. And she, ironically, she goes, "Oh, you're the gentleman with the pit bull." Cause I had a 8x10 with us. And I said, "Yeah." And we start talking. And I just remember it was like this cute little scene and she couldn't get her bag in the overhead. So I was like, I got it. And I put her bag in there and she had an assistant and she kindly requested that we switch seats so that she could sit with me. And she put her assistant in my seat and we sat for, I don't know what it was, a 3-hour flight or something like that the whole way. And talked about, you know, the plight of the pit bull and dog rescue advocacy and all this stuff. And she's got her own rescue foundation, a group called Linda Blair's World Heart Foundation. And it's a little bit of a mouthful, but she does a ton of great work. And she's kind of just devoted herself to that, I think. And so periodically, I'll get a text from her. It's usually like at some absurd time in the morning, as you do, and something about pit bull stuff. And I just couldn't think, you know, any, I just think, I'm trying to spit this out. I think the world of her. Sidebar, she also happens to be the star of one of my all time favorite horror movies. But yeah, so she's great. If you get the chance to meet her ever, just know that she's awesome.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you think Linda Blair, you know, from The Exorcist, probably the last person that you would think would have like a Pitbull Rescue Foundation, but that's amazing. I had no idea that she was into that.
Yeah, it's her rescue group. It's not specifically just Pitbulls, but it's definitely, she leans Pitbull heavy just because it's, there's so much, don't do that. There's so much, she's chewing on herself. There's just so many of them that just, need help. Let's just leave it at that. But yeah. You know, if you go to shelters across the country, it's predominantly pit bulls. So it's easy to sort of lean in that direction once you get sort of entrenched into the kind of rescue scene. You know, there's only so many border collies and other types of dogs. It's mostly pit bull mixes and stuff like that. Anyways, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I used to volunteer back when I lived in New York. There was this, you know, no-kill animal shelter. It's called Pets Alive. I don't know if you've ever heard of it in your...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in my hometown, and so I volunteer there all the time. And, you know, I've definitely gotten in my fair share of fights on Twitter about pit bulls, and it's just... There are times where it's just so frustrating. And you know that there's nothing that you can say to these people. They're just like the trolls. You got the trolls for everything, right? But... Oh. The
for everything. I don't know if you saw it, actually. It was probably like 2 hours ago. I posted a snippet of a conversation today on my story on Instagram. So I don't really post on there very often. And it was, it said something like, you know, if you don't like pit bulls, fuck you kind of thing or something like that. But it was my buddy Chris. I'll just throw him under the bus. My buddy Chris plays guitar for Bush. And we're both like really strongly opinionated pit bull advocates.
Yeah.
It's like one of the things we bonded over early. And I'm pretty, you know, people are like, oh, I don't like horror movies. I'm like, that's cool. People are like, oh, I don't like tattoos. I'm like, that's cool. People are like, I don't like pit bulls. I'm like, fuck you. It's like, that's a deal breaker. Anyways, I'll, and that's another thing I'll go down a deep rabbit hole on too. But so you definitely get it as an advocate and having worked at a rescue. And that's amazing you did that. I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, yeah. I used to volunteer there a little bit because they were right in my hometown. And Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20, he's like really, really involved with that.
No way.
Yeah, he's like, he's donated tons of money to him and everything. But yeah, they would have all these events and Rob would come and it was just a big, really great organization. I love the fact that they were like no euthanasia. You know, they took in every single dog that walked through their doors and kept them until, you know, somebody either adopted them or, you know, they, you know, passed away to natural causes or anything. But they had like a great, you know, like trail in the woods where you could walk. It was really beautiful. And I missed that stuff kind of living in the city because the rescues here are a little bit different, you know what I mean? We're in like a more urban environment, so it's a little bit, you know, tougher.
Yeah, of course. And it's frustrating because we really need more no kill. You know, they should all be no kill. I mean, yeah. If we can, I don't want to turn into some
head
talk. But yeah, we definitely need a lot more no kill shelters, especially major cities, especially Southern California. They really were pushing this whole NKLA agenda for a while. And they got some shelters to kind of flip over. It just doesn't make sense to euthanize pets, you know, not just dogs, but any healthy, you know, I see some of the, because I try to spend as much time, I guess, networking or whatever online and with different places and whatnot, just mostly Twitter and a couple things directly. But, and I've seen some atrocious stuff. I'm sure you probably have too, where it's just like, why was this animal put to sleep? You know? And, it just breaks my heart. So, but that's really cool. I didn't know Rob Thomas was so involved in something like that. That makes me be like, fuck yeah, Matchbox 20.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny because I used to go there again. That was when I was a little bit younger and when I lived. So my mom would come with me sometimes because she's a big, you know, dog lover too. And my mom actually went to Vegas one time and ran into Rob Thomas and was like, you're not going to believe this, but I volunteer at Pets Alive in Middletown. And he was like, holy shit. Like he couldn't believe it. He was like, you know, however many miles away, but yeah, he does a lot of work with them. He's donated a lot of money and making, you know, their facilities better and supplies and stuff. So fuck yeah, Matchbox 20.
Yeah, cool. That's rad.
So kind of touching a little bit back on the horror thing, I mean, that kind of translated that love for horror into your love for music in a way, because I know you're really into like the horror punk, you know, the Misfits. So were you a music lover first, or was the horror something that kind of turned you a little bit into a music lover?
I think it's why I gravitate towards bands like, you know, the Misfits and Danzig and the Cramps and Alice Cooper and, you know, Rocky Erickson and whatever the hell else early on. But I definitely was into horror movies at such a young age that I think it sort of predates me having interest in music knowingly or willingly. I think, you know, by the time I got into my own, like, I want to listen to this, I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, sort of a small human versus horror movies. It was just like at 5 years old, I was going to my dad's and we were going to put on House of Wax or, you know, Bride of Frankenstein or, you know, whatever it was. But it definitely, I do fondly remember discovering the Misfits for myself, which is still, you know, arguably like my favorite band or one of them. And I'm trying to do the math here. It would have been the early 90s and I was like 11 and I was really into Metallica because everywhere you went, it was Metallica. It was like, you know, on the heels of the Black Album.
Right.
And it was just, they were everywhere. And somebody for a birthday got me a coffee table book on Metallica. And I remember in every photo, I'm like, the bass player's got this skull tattoo, the singer's wearing it on a shirt. I'm like, what is this? And I was like, okay, so the Misfits, Fiend Club. I'm like, what is this? And maybe within a year, I went to the record store and I bought Walk Among Us on cassette. And I couldn't been a day over 12, maybe 13 at the most. And I remember, you know, like the lyrics, I was like, there's a song called Vampyra, and there's a song called Night of the Living Dead, and there's a song about brain eaters. I was like, you know, and I remember going to my dad's house and being like, there's a band and they have songs about horror movies, like the stuff you make me watch, but they sound like angry punk rock, but they look like Kiss, you know? And I was just like, this is for me. This is my, these are my people. And so that definitely steered me in a, is that even a word? Steered me in a direction. And I think when I was 12, 13, 14 and listening to what I would just say everything. I mean, I was listening to Beach Boys and Dr. Dre and Soundgarden and Green Day and whatever. I listened to whatever I wanted because there was no clicks yet. That was like a high school thing. And at this point I was kind of like in middle school. And I think everybody was just so awkward that it didn't matter. I just found myself gravitating towards sort of punk rock. And I moved to San Diego when I was a freshman. And I just showed up wearing a Misfits shirt. And all of a sudden, all the punk kids were like, come with us, you know? And it just went that direction. But I still listen to everything. I mean, even my record collection is super eclectic, which I'm proud of. And, you know, I'll go from Enya to Carcass in a 10-minute span. I like what I like. And then I started a band, and it, of course, you know, it was like the easiest band to start, you know, when you're a shitty guitar player is a punk rock band. And so, but I guess that's kind of where that trajectory went. But I still have, you know, I mean, look, just wearing, you know, horror punk or psychobilly, whatever you want to call it. And I still gravitate towards that. Like if someone goes, hey man, did you hear about this band that sings about Vincent Price movies? And I'm like, go on, tell me more. You know, which is why I think inadvertently I'm such a huge Alice Cooper fan. I know you are as well, yes. Obviously.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm a lifer. And, you know, I think, I don't know what happened, but somebody tried to turn me on to Alice Cooper as a teenager. And I was like, nope, not for me. And then I think somebody played me some of the glammy stuff.
Okay.
So I think it was like Trap. It was like something off Trash. And I was like, oh, of course I know Billion Dollar Babies and I'm 18 and those songs. But, you know, when you're 14, I'm like, that's like dad rock. I'm like, I'm not interested. And then I hit maybe 19 or 20 or 21 and got more interested in sort of guitar-based music. And, you know, I say I was listening to less Misfits and more Alice Cooper and less Stiff Little Fingers and more Thin Lizzy and yada, yada, yada. I don't know what happened, but I think I was 21 and I bought... Because I'm like going like, where did I live and who was I dating? What band was I in? And I bought Welcome to My Nightmare. And I was like, this is my album. I was like, this is it. I have the spider from the back.
Yeah. Room.
And I was like, oh, okay. I get it now. And then I went down this gnarly rabbit hole for like 3 years where all I listened to was Alice Cooper. And it was like the Brutal Planet era.
Okay.
He was sort of like industrial or something, you know, like bordering. And I remember being like, yeah, I was like, this is heavy. I was like, this isn't dad rock. This is awesome. You know, I think, you know, it just was like, oh, Lace and Whiskey, you know, when you're 14, that didn't resonate with me. And it wasn't that I had like an older sibling that kind of maybe shoved it down my throat. Like maybe some people in the last 30 years have had. It just, somebody was playing it and I was like, oh, this isn't for me. And then in hindsight, I'm like, wow, I wish I had picked up the right albums earlier on, because I would have just, I don't know what it would have done for me, but probably improve my guitar playing. But definitely a big Alice Cooper fan, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it was like for me, except my parents really did shove music down my throat. Yeah. And I'm glad that they did. I mean, they're big hard rock and heavy metal fans. So, I mean, I kind of grew up listening to all that stuff and heard, you know, people, you know, bands like Alice Cooper and Black Sabbath, Dio at a very early age. So, you know, I thank them for just shoving it down my throat and kind of forcing me to listen to it. In a way, I mean, sometimes when you're young, like kind of like you said, I mean, I got to a point, like I went through this weird phase where I stopped listening to rock for a little bit because I was like an early teenager and I kind of was like, I've been listening to this forever. Like, I want to listen to my own thing.
Yeah.
Big mistake. I didn't like any of it at all, really. But yeah, it's interesting how things kind of affect you a little bit later on? Because that's kind of what it was like. I went back to certain stuff that I listened to when I was younger. It was like, yeah. Oh, wow, I actually really dig this now. Like something in me gets it. So I totally know what you mean by that.
Well, I don't know where this comes from, but you know, and you're a young lady, but like they say, the music that you discover and are listening to while you're growing up or maturing or whatever, you know, from like 13 to 18, like that window is what you take with you kind of for life.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know, whether it's the Eagles or Alice Cooper or Tesla or whatever genre, you know, or Warren G or whatever it is, you know, and I've definitely found that to be true as I've sort of gone back. Even last night at like 5 a.m, I'm like online, like buying, you know, $10 records of like, I can't believe I don't have She's So Unusual from Cyndi Lauper. That's critical listening. I love that on cassette when I was 10. I need it now, you know? And so all the stuff that I listen to on the reg is the same, predominantly the same stuff that I listen to from like 12 to 19,
right.
You know, and still, you know, and having like a background in sort of punk rock bands, there was a long period of time where I was like, oh, I did that. I was either in these bands or played with these bands or toured these bands or met them and I hate them. And so I set all that aside and I was like, oh, I'm a rock guy now. But now I've sort of gone back. It's almost, not that it ever wasn't in vogue, but I feel like it's almost, maybe in the last 10 years, I feel like there's more of an acceptance amongst my peers, maybe, to be like, oh, I like GBH, but I also like, you know, Eminem, you know? And so I've sort of gone back and been like, what were the records that I was listening to? Because as I collect vinyl, clearly there's a whole slew of it back there.
Me too.
But I see yours. And so I've been going back and sort of reacquiring stuff that maybe I had on cassette or I had on CD and didn't make it this far into my life, or you know, I'm like, oh, I've got those two songs digitally, blah, blah. But I'm like, okay, now I need the, you know, I need my 12-inch copy.
Right.
So I don't even know where I'm going with this, but yeah. So punk rock, heavy metal, it's all good.
What did you think of the bands that you eventually became a part of when you were listening? Because I mean, now you're in LA Guns, you were in Faster Pussycat, you know, that kind of 80s glam metal, if you will, esque music. I mean, were you a fan of that? Did you think at the time it wasn't really for you?
I think it's known now, but no, I wasn't a fan. Not because I missed this era of music by probably maybe 3 years or so. I mean, by the time I was buying records, you know, I mentioned my buddy who's in Bush earlier. One of the first records I ever bought with my own money was the debut Bush record, 16 Stone. So I'm thinking like 94. So I would have been 11.
It was right. It was right past when all that stuff was just kind of.
Yeah. I think if I was 3, 4, 5 years older, I probably would have got it. And so I missed all that. I remember watching MTV and I remember seeing Rackman on Headbangers Ball. And I remember seeing Motley Crue videos and Billy Idol videos and being like these. I always thought everyone looked cool, but like maybe the music just didn't really register.
Right.
And I just, by the time I got into music, it was sort of like I don't want to say grunge, but it was like alternative era. So Metallica was still cool. I remember I waited in line to buy Load, which I'm a big fan of that record. And for, you know, sentimental reasons. And so I missed all that stuff. And I was aware of those bands. And then, like I said, when I got into my 20s, I started going like, okay, I want to listen to less punk and more rock or whatever, just because I wanted to sort of expand my, you know, guitar or whatever. And I went through a really big Guns N' Roses phase, which I think probably everybody does. Actually, I was living in this is so fucking cliche. I was living in a rehearsal space in North Hollywood, which is a studio that probably a ton of famous bands have probably been in and out of. But I was literally living in a room, like probably small, probably about the size of my office here, and on a couch. And all I had was like my laptop and like 8 DVDs, and 2 of them were the Use Your Illusion tour DVDs. So I just was like, I'm going to learn every song on here and if it kills me, you know. And sorry, the dog is looking out the window.
Oh, she's so precious. I love her.
That makes 2 of us. That's like her TV. So, but anytime she's captivated by something out there, I'm always like, well, what is it? You know, what's going on out there?
Yeah, I have a front door and my little puppy. I have like an 8-month-old puppy right now. And
what kind of puppy?
He's a Cairn Terrier and a Scottish Terrier mix.
It's going to be a handful.
Yeah, she's a little monster. I call her, she's a menace. That's my nickname for her. But we have a front door that faces out into the street. And I don't live in like a super, super busy part of the city, but enough, you know, people walk by, cars are always going by. And so she's just, that's her spot too. So it's like just completely, I totally get it.
Keeping an eye on everything.
But continue. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh no, it's okay. The dogs take precedence anyhow. I already totally lost my train of thought. Oh, it's punk rock or
Guns N' Roses we were at.
LA Guns and Fast Pussy Cat. So by default, you know, like I knew of LA Guns and Faster Pussycat. And I think I bought the first Pussycat album and the first LA Guns record. I was probably like, you know, 23, 24. And then ended up in a band with Chad Stewart, who's in Faster Pussycat, who at the time was in both. He was doing Tracy's version of LA Guns, I think, at the time. So I remember kind of being like, oh, I'm running in circles, the same circle with these people. And which was probably about 2 years before joining Pussycat. But you know, I didn't grow up listening to them. It's no secret. And I, you know, a lot of these bands, especially the sort of third and fourth and fifth and eighth tier bands, I didn't discover until, you know, people were like, what's your favorite Tora album? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I'm sorry, but I tell you all about, you know, Green Day's discography or what, you know, what year the Misfits formed or something stupid. But, you know, I just didn't get into that. And on top of that, my older sister, my older half sister, who I didn't ever live with, so I don't think there was really a heavy influence, but what little she had was punk rock. She was the one that, like 10, 11 years old, she goes, here's some Social Distortion, The Damned, and The Ramones. Take this and go, you know? And so there was never, she was never into that stuff either. She was apparently a punk rocker, so in her day. So, you know, but it's obviously become the thing I've grown to respect. I mean, I just bought recently the first Enough's Enough record, which I think is fantastic. And a lot of these bands have grown on me. I'm a huge Cinderella fan.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just lost Jeff Labar. And, you know, so a lot of these bands now are stuff I listen to. But again, it wasn't the kind of thing I grew up with.
Right. Now, I'm not 100% familiar with what the story is of you joining the band, because I know that, of course, you kind of came in post their, you know, Phil and Tracy's kind of reunion, if you will, in 2017. Sure. It was kind of after that era and before the next record that had come out, you know, The Devil You Know. But what was the story of you getting into the band? You know, how did Tracy contact you or Phil, you know, that kind of whole thing?
I mean, the easiest way to word it is that I was courted. And I don't think I'm talking out of turn with any of this, but, you know, choose my wording carefully. My manager, Scott Ludwig, reached out to me at one point and was like, hey, you know, I usually, hey, it's Scotty here. I just, I was wondering, what are you doing in 3 weeks? You know, I like to do that. And I just was like, you know, I don't think it's for me. But I, you know, anytime anything comes up like that, you thank you for considering me. And, you know, it's humbling. And I was talking about this last night with my buddy Jack. I said, you know, I was in this 9-year marriage, if you will, and I didn't really want to stray from my marriage and try something on the side and have it not work out and it fuck up my marriage. And I was so just after, because I was in Pussycat for just shy of 10 years.
Yeah.
And so a long time. And it's almost like I think people don't realize how long 10 years is in one band. And especially that one. But I just couldn't sort of see the forest for the trees and was so, you know, in this band. And a few people have brought this up and it doesn't really register with me this so much, but I was the lead guitar player in Faster Pussycat, you know, and in LA Guns, I'm basically a glorified rhythm second guitar. And so it didn't really bother me sort of stepping down, if you will, because obviously Tracy Guns is a complete legend and it's his band. It's literally his namesake. And so my ego in that respect was never a factor. It was just sort of like, I didn't want to deviate from what I was comfortable and knew. And they contacted me, I think, three times over the course of, let's call it 6-8 months. And I just was like, you know, thank you, but no thank you. And I was going through, we did a 2-month tour with Pussycat, I think 2018, that makes sense, summer. And I was just sort of going through some personal stuff and all this nonsense. And they called and said, hey, we need, it's us again. And because it was never Tracy or Phil directly, it was management. Okay. And then Scotty, our manager, and Phil Lewis came to a show in Vegas and basically sat me down in the dressing room and were like, look, we think you're the guy. We see what you add to Faster Pussycat. We respect you. The phrase was, we think you're going to help us sell tickets and we want you in this band. And I was just like, wow, like nobody talks, no one's like that. No one treats me like that over here. And so, you know, it was nice to be validated by somebody else. And so, I came home from one tour and they wanted me to go out with them to Europe 3 days later. And I just was like, I can't do it. I just can't. And so they brought in Adam Hamilton, who's sort of like our secret weapon within the band, who's been in and out of LA Guns over the last like 15 years. He also engineers and co-produces a bunch of this stuff, including the upcoming record. And so he did the tour and they came home and we got together and we got in a room and we had 3 days of rehearsal scheduled and we went through the set maybe 2 or 3 times. And Tracy was like, you don't need to come in the next two days, do you? And I said, I don't, I'm good if you're good. And he was like, no, you got it, man. And so that was it. And I went out with them. We did like a 2-week tour. And I remember pulling Johnny Martin, our bass player, aside. I said, is this how it always is? And he says, what do you mean? I said, nobody's yelling or drunk or being rude or whatever. I don't want to, you know. And he was like, no, it's always like this. And I said, I'm having a really good time. He said, yeah. And, you know, Phil and I would go in the back lounge and drink a bottle of wine, talk about when he saw Generation X at the Marquee Club in 78 and, you know, the Damned in 80 and just, you know, Motorhead and all these things. And Tracy would, you know, hey, do you want to, like, I've got a Tracy guitar. Do you want to take this guitar? You know, here, play with it. Just borrow. Here's some gear. You know, come over to my house. It's barbecue. And I was like, wow, what a different environment this is. And so I did both for about a year where it worked. And then at about a year in roughly 2 years ago, 2019, they had a summer tour. And I just called Tamey, probably gave him about a 3-month heads up. And I just said, hey, Bubba, I can't do this summer tour. I've got prior commitments with Guns. And I said, but I'm happy to pick someone I think would be great for you guys. And, you know, good for you mentally speaking, you know, with his sobriety. And I brought in Sam Bam Colton and basically, you know, and I never left LA Guns and he never left Faster Pussycat. And it's sort of inadvertently worked out for both of us. So, and I'm super proud of that kid and he's doing a great job with Pussycat. He's the best guitar player that band's ever had or probably ever will have. And very talented and, you know, up and coming. You know, I tell everybody, I even said this last night, I said, he's going to be the next Jerry Cantrell. And because that's like his favorite guy. But anyways, yeah, so it just worked out. And that's how I joined. And they just never, you know, I just kept showing up, you know, so here I am.
How has it been writing with Tracy? Because, you know, like you kind of said, you guys have all become good friends. You know, he's kind of a legend now in his own right. So, I mean, you guys did the last record, you're working on this next record that's coming out this November. So how has it just been writing with them and kind of getting creative with them?
Easy, but also at the same time, not traditional because we did it all well remotely, if you will.
Right.
I prefer if I had my druthers, I would be in a room and it's like you, me, the drummer, the saxophone guy. I want to get in a room and write and hash it out, or at least with another person. And so we did it all, I got an email, you know what I mean? So, just in general, that's not my preferred writing style, but I submitted a couple songs and they ended up, I think two, I don't know. And then, you know, I'd get sent something and I would just add like, hey, this bridge section is just these chords. What if I take that out and add this oeuvre to it or whatever? And or come up with harmony parts or whatever. And I'd send them and some of them made the record and some of them didn't, you know? So it was easy. It was at no point was there any weirdness or we hate what you did or, you know, whatever. And they obviously allowed me to submit music. And one of the songs, I probably shouldn't say it, but was written for somebody. It was written for another artist. And it just turned into the kind of thing where when we were talking about this album, I said, I've got these three songs. And Tracy was like, text them to me. I was like, okay. So easy, you know, fairly easy. And I like that, you know, although Faster Pussycat is now slowly releasing things bit by bit, you know, being in that band for 10 years and not having at least one album out or even an EP or anything was made me, somebody's doing wheelies in the down the road. It was a little disappointing. And so, and even though I played on the single that Tammy just put out to some degree, you know, I mean, I've been in Elegance for 3 years. I'm on, you know, I got my second album coming out at the end of the year and an EP and, you know, a single and whatever else, you know? And so it's nice to be a part of an outfit that is, you know, regularly releasing new music or, you know, like the live album or whatever, anything, you know? So, from a creative standpoint, I think anybody would understand that. And then with the pandemic and everything now, I mean, I've done more recorded output, even stuff that's not even out yet, since I would say the end of 2019, leading up to even now, even this week, I'm working on a project where I'm happy that I'm able to, you know, I played on my buddy Aaron put out a record with Cleopatra under his work, his artist title is Empty Streets. It's sort of an EDM, like Depeche Mode meets, I don't know what, electronic music. And I played on that. That just came out on Friday. And so I've got stuff just sort of periodically coming out. The new LA Guns album in the fall, we just put out the live album. I guested on my friend's EP, this band from the Northeast called Defiant. We did a cover of this old punk band called The Addicts. I'm on the upcoming Tiffany album. With Johnny Martin and Scott Coogan and Tracy.
Wow.
And I don't know exactly when that'll be out, but just, it's nice to have something coming out every 2 or 3 months,
yeah,
even during, you know, the apocalypse and, you know, just keeping myself busy and it's sort of reaffirming like, oh, I am an artist, you know, like that kind of thing. So it's cool.
Yeah. It's crazy. The remote recording that happens nowadays. And it's funny, right? Because so, I mean, it's the norm now. I feel like everybody I talk to, it's, you know, over email or whatever. And I always think of the example, I mean, I'd heard, I don't know if you've heard of the project that George Lynch did like last year, it was called Dirty Shirley. And so Dino Jelusic, who just joined Whitesnake, he is in Croatia and George is in the US. And they did that entire record without ever meeting each other.
Yeah.
They never met each other. And it blows my mind. And it's one of those, you know, things that I always, you know, ask people. I'm like, it must just be so weird to like, to do that. And, you know, the chemistry that, you know, usually that you would have when you're in a room together and, you know, just bouncing ideas off of each other and stuff, you know, it definitely probably has greatly changed when you're doing stuff just over email.
I think, yeah, it definitely, for me personally, it takes away a little bit, but I mean, that's just like the way it is now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I remember when it was just vinyl. It's like, sorry, that's not how it is anymore.
Right.
You know, times they are changing, but at the end of the day, it's great for creative purposes. I mean, it has taken a little bit of the, sort of traditional analog value away from it, but, who cares? You know, it's like, I think it's great. I love that I can record. I literally did the most of the LA Guns record right here. I've got my monitors here and my little console under the laptop here. And, you know, I did it here. I've done the project I'm doing right now. I'll be doing seated right here. And, I think that's cool. The last thing that I did where we got all together in a room was, I've got a project called Neon Coven.
Yes.
That's sort of like, I don't know what to call it, like electronic goth metal rock, whatever. And, a little more traditional than maybe what Empty Streets did, which is basically just synth based. But, you know, the guys from Neon Coven and myself all got in a room and fleshed out a bunch of songs. And fortunately, we've got a creative genius in the band, which is Jacob Bunton, who's known for Adler, not Adler's Appetite, but Adler. And excuse me. And he's also working with Mick Mars on a hopefully upcoming solo album, which I don't know what's going on with that, but I've heard it and it's awesome. And so he's singing for that. And then he's also a producer and ghostwriter and he does all this stuff. But Jacob and the guys in Neon Coven, I mean, we get in a room and I mean, I think we got together several times in each session. We were like pumping out three songs. So, and Jacob would take something and put his cans on and he'd be like, all right, song's done. You know, and we're like, oh, okay. That was easy because that's what he does.
Right.
So he makes it look effortless, but that was the last time. I guess that would have been March or April. It was like right at the tip of the Armageddon here of the pandemic. And because we're most of that band at the time was Hollywood based, or at least adjacent. I think my singer was 1 mile that way and Jacob was a half a mile on down the road on Vine. So we would like walk and meet at a coffee shop in the middle. And anyways, so yeah, so that was always fun to just get in a room and, you know, I've got this riff. And we'll be, Neon Coven will be put, we just put out the album in November.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess Halloween, Future Postponed. And then we've got some more stuff we're working on slowly here too. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some more singles or whatever else this year from that outfit as well.
Yeah, it's such an interesting project because it's a little bit different than stuff that you normally do. You know, when I heard it for the first time, I was like, oh, this is like really interesting. It's kind of like got like a, it was like a synthy vibe to it. Like at the first, my first impression was like, it's a little new wavy in some spots.
Yeah,
like it's,
totally.
It's kind of cool. So, I mean, I know that you have worked with some other people that you haven't previously worked with in this band, but yeah. Like what was the decision to kind of to make the band go in that direction?
My singer, Anthony, and Jacob Bunton, who's sort of the plays everything almost guy, and me, myself, we repeatedly were together on a Monsters of Rock cruise together. And some of the people in production joked that we should start a boy band because we were like the young, like, you know, handsome, tattooed, you know, hired gun guys. And we kind of laughed and made a joke out of it. And then we got together at the Rainbow one night and said, you know what, fuck it, let's do a band. You know, why not? And we said, everyone is going to expect us to do like, you know, Sunset Strip, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were all like, raise your hand if you don't want to do that. And we were like, okay. And so we all kind of mutually agreed that we were like, you know, Depeche Mode, Nine Inch Nails, Rob Zombie, synth, you know, Four on the Floor, contemporary yet almost with a weird retro throwback. Like the album is sort of, because I think you're the first person to hear this, but I think I got the final say in sequencing because I think we all had like our own opinion on how it should go. And I think we went with like mine with the exception of one track listing. And the A side almost opens with a very 80s. There's some, definitely some Kaja Goo Goo moments. And I think there's two songs, I think, that have zero guitar. And so it's kind of light and poppy and 80s. And then it starts to kind of ramp up into this like Ministry vibe. And it gets like heavier and darker and more somber as the album goes on. And it's also the first album I've contributed lyrics to formally in probably 15 years, a lifetime, a long time. And so I was happy to get that opportunity. And I prefer the B side of the album just because it's a little more typo negative and rock or whatever. And we re-released a series of singles. And one of my three contributions to the album, a track called Dead to Me, ended up, which I think is probably arguably the heaviest song on the record, ended up getting the most terrestrial radio play and added to a bevy of what's the thing now, Spotify playlists and all this stuff. And it's sort of the most like Rob Zombie type song. And it, you know, and I'm kind of, I guess, proud of that, that it got that much attention. And the guitar solo in it, I literally was laughing while we were doing it. And we were all having, just laughing. And it was a one take, I think, with like an edit in the middle, and that was it. But we were like, it was so absurd that it had to go on the record. And so I enjoyed that. But it's a really cool project. I'm glad that it's like anything I do that's, I guess, sort of outside of the norm, like the Empty Streets thing, you know, the EDM or the upcoming Tiffany album, or, you know, I'm trying to think what else I've done recently where if it's not just like what you would expect, I think the better for me. You know, I like expanding beyond just maybe what people would expect a guy from Faster Pussycat or LA Guns to do, you know?
Right. Now, do you have any plans, or does the band have any plans to do shows for Neon Kevin in the future? I mean, obviously I'm talking post whatever the hell is going to happen this fall. That's just, I'm trying not to think about it, but in a perfect world, maybe next year, or, you know, once we get kind of back to continuous live shows, is there any plans to do some stuff with them?
Yeah. I mean, we've been offered a few things. I wouldn't be surprised if, depending on the climate, if we did something in October, maybe. But, you know, it's one of those things where with social media, people are like, go on tour, come to Kentucky, come to Florida. And it's like, it's just not that kind of band. It's really, you know, I'm sure some members will frown upon this, but it's really just a studio project. And we did a streaming show last year, which was great. And we did a show at the Whiskey just before COVID. And we've done a couple, like, you know, 5-song, 3-song jam night event things. So we've gotten on stage a few times as collectively as a band, but, you know, I'm not eager to tour or get on stage or anything at this moment. And especially with something like that, where it's so much sort of work would go into it, where it's just easier for us to just email files and, you know, see you when I see you. But I'm sure, you know, within the year or so, there'll be at least a Neon Coven show or three. So, you know, time will tell, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I have my fingers crossed. I have a lot of shows planned for the fall, and I'm seeing the cancellations starting to roll in, and it's just like, not again. I don't want to do this again.
Very upsetting. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff I want to see and a bunch of stuff I want to do. And, you know, I'm just kind of holding on tight here personally. I can only speak for myself, but you know, hopefully, you know, I think I saw an announcement from a band I like today, and they said, you know, if you're not, you have to show proof of vaccine or a negative test to come to our show. Yeah. And I, of course, there's a bunch of people, you know, and I was like, hey man, you know, it's their show.
Yeah.
And, you know, without politicizing it, which is, I guess, hard to do today. You know, if I'm in Iron Maiden or I'm in Metallica or I'm in Kesha's band, and my boss or management or the artist or the band says, this is what we're doing, because we feel it's for the best for our audience or the best for our health or whatever, then you can either do it or you cannot come to the show. But the flip side is having no shows. So, you know,
what are you gonna do? Yeah, that's what I always go back to. It's like, you know, to me at this point, it's not even like a political thing. I mean, it's one of those things where if you want the freedom to choose whether or not you want to get it, then businesses have the freedom to choose whether or not they want to let you in, whether or not they want you in the show.
And it's hard because we also, not just us, but everybody, most bands, we have a lot of people on sort of both sides of the coin that are sort of an audience, fan base wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not, you know, I dialed back my political jargon on Twitter about a year ago, maybe longer. And, you know, it's not my place to tell anybody who to vote for, or how to treat their body, or what they can or can't do, or what the fuck ever. But at the end of the day, if I want to go back on tour and you want your favorite artist to make a living still, these are probably the steps that need to be taken in order for that to happen. And, you know, I can have my own opinion on it. I didn't post about it, blah, 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 but I'm vaccinated, because it's just that I also didn't post online when I got a doctor with his finger in my butt either, you know, and it's just personal health.
Yeah.
That's me. That's my business. And so, by the way, tell that doctor I said he owes me a dinner. But, you know, it just, I think that's what is the best thing under the circumstances. And so, and I didn't, and I'm not a big, I wasn't, you know, eager to do it either. I'll just say that. And so, but I want to go back on tour.
Yeah.
So, and I have a feeling that by come January, it's going to be probably a mandatory thing. So, and you can politicize it or tinfoil hat it or question it all day long. And I'm not here to disagree or agree with anybody, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I walk around my house barefoot, but if I want to go into 7-Eleven, I have to wear shoes. So,
all right.
You know,
it's just how it is.
It's just how it is.
Just how it is.
And if we all grow a third arm or, you know.
At least they'll be at a concert, right? That's
yeah, kind of, you know, it's better than spending another 18 months, you know, sort of, whatever. I don't want to keep going on this because then somebody, I'm not coming to your concert because I saw what you said on the podcast, you know, which is like, no matter what, you can't win with somebody somewhere. Yeah. So
I think just bottom of the line, like music fans want music back. They want live music back. And, you know, I think that a lot of people don't fully understand how just devastating this year was for literally anybody who works in the entertainment industry, the music industry. And that if we have another year like this year, the venues that people love, the bands that people love,
they're going to go away. There's a lot of things behind closed doors that the average fan isn't privy to that maybe someone like yourself or myself or guy in a band or manager guy are aware of. And there are so many venues that closed or maybe smaller bands that broke up or, you know, people that are having to prioritize maybe their family or their home life or retire from touring or whatever. And the longer this goes on, that's going to increase exponentially. Absolutely. And you're going to see, and by the time, if and when there is any sort of normalcy again, whenever and whatever that may be, there's going to be a lot less of everything. So it's like, you may hate the, you know, I don't agree with it. Well, okay, then don't go to the show. Don't do it. Do whatever you want. But you can't subject, you know, whatever it is, movie theaters or bands or comedians or whatever to, you know, what we're just supposed to just shrivel up and die because you don't agree with some, I just, you know, what about the people that do agree? You know, what if, you know, there's still those people that, you know, they're like, I got vaccinated. I want to go to a concert or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, I agree to wear shoes. I want to go to a concert, you know? So it's the, you know, what is it? Small victories, I guess. And there's some shows in the fall I'm looking forward to going to, and I hope they happen, you know? And if I got to pull out my little, got it on my phone now, but like a picture that says, I'm healthy or whatever the fuck it is, then I will, because I want to go to the concert.
Right.
So anyways, I already know this is going to come back and bite me in the ass. So I'm going to quickly steer away.
I'll make it look good. Don't worry about it.
Perfect.
Oh, well, I don't want to keep you for too much longer, but this was so much fun. Thank you so much for coming on and joining me. And excited to hear the record that's coming out in November. So everybody's Checkered Past. LA Gun's going to be available this November. And stay tuned. You can follow Ace. I know he has a plethora of social media that he's active on. He's always keeping people updated with what he's doing, new projects, you know, album release dates and all that stuff. So feel free to follow him and stay tuned. But thank you so much. This was such a blast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a blast.
You guys just finished listening to my interview with Ace Von Johnson, guitarist for LA Guns and Neon Coven. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this conversation. You know, it was one of those interviews where we were kind of just chatting, and I didn't realize how much time had gone by until I looked at my clock and was like, oh wow, we've been talking for an hour. So I hope that you guys enjoyed the entirety of the conversation and the more conversational aspect of this one. You know, like I said, I think for so long, I just really was trying to make everything that I recorded like perfect. And now I kind of just like talking to you guys and talking to the people I have on, you know, like we're just hanging out and talking about music and catching up with each other. So I hope you guys are kind of getting that vibe too and are liking that a little bit more. But this was a fun one to record and was definitely one of those interviews where the time just flew by. We were kind of just so into what we were talking about, and It was a blast. So if you really loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal from the Inside podcast, the best place to do so is at www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here you can go ahead and click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. If you would like to donate and get something really cool in return, you can purchase official Metal from the Inside merchandise from renowned heavy metal, death metal, thrash metal label Season of Mist. All you have to do is go to www.season-of-mist.com. Go ahead and type Metal from the Inside into the search bar and our Flame logo tee will pop right up. The Flame logo is available in many, many styles, including long sleeves, short sleeves, a camo tee, a zip-up hoodie, a cropped hoodie, a woman's cut shirt, so many different options. The options are honestly endless. So if you would like to purchase a shirt, that is the place to do so. And it's a really great way to also support the podcast. Profits from that shirt will go directly back into creating even better content for you guys. And if you do purchase a Metal from the Inside shirt, be sure to take a picture of you repping it, post it on social media, tag me and the official Metal from the Inside accounts in your post, and we'll be more than happy to repost it and share. It's like one of my favorite things to see you guys wearing the merch, so that would be really, really cool. Feel free to send that in, and yeah, it's a really great way to support the podcast. If you guys would like to stay up to date with everything that Metal from the Inside has going on, the best place to do so is at www.metalfromtheinside.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can watch all of the interviews, including this week's episode with Ace Von Johnson. My interview with Steven Jensen is also available, as well as my conversation with Dee Snider, Alice Cooper. The list just goes on and on. You can actually watch the conversations and watch the interviews. So go ahead and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can go ahead and click on the little bell as well so that you receive notifications whenever we post a video, so you don't miss any interviews over there on the YouTube channel. So we are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside and on Twitter at MFTIOfficial. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. I share everything that we've got going on over here on the podcast, as well as recent pieces that I've written for Brave Words, where I am a contributor. I recently just wrote a review for Dee Snider's newest solo record, Leave a Scar, which is such a fantastic record. I had Dee on the podcast a couple of episodes to chat about the record and everything that he's had going on, but the most recent piece for Brave Words is a review of Leave a Scar, so go ahead and check that out. I also share everything that I've got going on over at Sea of Tranquility, including our weekly Hudson Valley Squares episodes, if I guest on any additional shows, any album rankings. I also share album anniversaries, do music polls, and share any other podcasts that I'm on. I'm going to be on another friend's podcast this week or next week. We're recording this week, but I'll be sharing that as well once that's live. So be sure to go ahead and connect with me there so you can just stay up to date with everything that's going on with Metal from the Inside and myself. That is all I've got for this week's episode, episode 45 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. As always, we will be right back here next week, 1 week from today, for episode 46 of the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed this week's conversation with Ace Von Johnson. Be sure to let Ace and I know that you listened to this week's episode. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. See you next week and rock on.